Today's presenter is Ben Thompson. Ben is a senior IT specialist for IBM Software Services, or WebSphere, in the United Kingdom. He has worked with distributed transactional middleware for 8 years and has extensive experience designing and implementing solutions using WebSphere product portfolio with IBM customers worldwide. At this time, we would like to turn the presentation over to Ben.
Thanks, Elijah. So at the moment, we're on the title of the entire slide deck, just the title panel there. We'll have that for a couple of minutes. The support pack I'm going to be talking about today was first published in November 2007, and that was just prior to the release of the latest version of the WebSphere Message Broker products, version 6.1. The Eclipse plugin and the format of the message maps within that tooling operate such that we can happily support both the version 6 and version 6.1 of the products. So if you go to the website to actually download the support pack, you'll see that it referred to the most recent version 6.1, but rest assured it's still perfectly fine with version 6 as well, as that was the main version that I developed it for. I'm the author of the support pack, and I actually produced the code, so any emails of congratulation or criticism should be directed to me. At the same time, I'd like to give a quick name check to a couple of colleagues, one who's actually left IBM, Lee Hollingdale, and another, Kevin Braithwaite, who works for the technical sales community here in the UK, and they gave me some of the functional suggestions and encouragement ideas and so on. Aside from that, the work is my own. So we'll now flip on to the slide number 2 in the deck, and that will show us the agenda for what we're going to cover during the call. It's pretty self-explanatory what I've got here, but just to go through the bullets. Basically, the business justification for the support pack is basically why I created it in the first place. I want to give you some flavor of the problem that I was solving with it. The source code section is all about what I actually created. The installation is then how we actually install it. The samples section discusses a series of separate message flows and message map files, which are actually shipped as part of the support pack, and they demonstrate quite well how it can be used. So this section includes quite a few screenshots so you can get a feel for how the support pack actually works in practice. The performance section chronicles some of the performance testing of the support pack, which was done with version 6 of the broker, as that was the most recent version at the time that it was actually released. The statement of support section details what mapping functions are actually supported and a few of which are not supported. In this instance, I'm using the phrase supported, meaning that the plugin itself is aware of some syntaxes that are used within the message map file of the broker, but it's not aware of some of the other syntaxes. So rather than a statement of support, meaning resolution of any bugs which might be discovered, it's simply there talking about what syntax we know about and what we support. While we're on the topic of supporting of bugs and so on, IA9Y is actually classified as a Category 2 support pack. And to quote the IBM website, what that actually means is that it's provided in good faith and as is, and there is no warranty of further service implied or committed. In longhand, I suppose that's really just a disclaimer referring to the fact that support packs are generally produced by individuals, in this case me, rather than the IBM service organization. So that means that we can't actually guarantee any quality of service in the speed of response or the overall resolution of any defects. Having said that, the position with IA9Y in particular is actually pretty good. I'm still employed by IBM a year on, so no problems have been reported to me on that score. And no problems have actually been highlighted yet with a support pack. So overall, I've got good reason to believe that the code is pretty solid there. In addition to that, you're also in quite a good position with IA9Y in that IBM has actually published the source code for the support pack up on the main site. So if you did want to play around with the code yourself, you're at liberty to do so, and there's no problem with that from any sort of support point of view. I guess also at this stage I should point out that there was no secret knowledge about the internals of the broker that went into producing the support pack. All that I did in order to produce it was inspect the syntax of the message map files, which were actually generated by the message broker tooling. We make no secret about the syntax of those message map files. It's basically an XML format which describes what you see graphically on the tooling screen when you actually create a drag and drop of that type. This is typical of the open approach offered by IBM with Eclipse, and so built on top of that message map syntax, all I've really done is applied it to the XML. So after that statement of support, just to get back to the agenda that we've got in front of us here, we're going to leave some time for questions at the end. overall, I expect that my talking will take around about 30, 40 minutes, and then from that point we'll have a free-form session to see if there are any questions arising from what I've said. So now we'll flip on to slide number 3 in the deck, please, Elijah. Great. So talking about that business justification a little bit more, this slide was actually originally used by myself in order to justify the support pack's inclusion to the WebSphere Message Broker offering team. This is an internal team within IBM which basically takes representatives from all of the areas of the product, including development, the architecture team, strategy, services like myself, marketing, sales, and so on. All of these people basically say whether or not it would be a good thing useful to the community. Over the last sort of few years, internally, the support pack regulation that the broker has made mandatory for all of the support pack offerings has become a lot more controlled, and this means that it's an easy vehicle for us to then get the information to the market early before actually waiting for the next version of the main product. So in this way, we're actually able to get the technology out there and hopefully make it a bit more useful in order to fulfill those requirements that we actually see out at customers. So being part of software services, I actually bring those requirements back into the lab. And it's been certainly one thing I'd like to make very clear here is that the strategic positioning of mapping technologies within the broker's portfolio is extremely important to us. I mean, following on from the acquisition of the WebSphere Transformation Extender, I hope this shows the market quite how serious we are about graphical tooling and the ability to use that graphical tooling in order to carry out the broker's very core tasks, such as transformation. Historically, of course, I've always referred to the broker as a stateless transformation and routing engine. Nowadays, we tend to put less emphasis on the stateless part and more emphasis on the ESB technology aspects of this. But what has remained constant throughout its lifespan has been this focus on the transformation and routing, and it's at that core part of the product that we're applying this support pack in order to help those who've already used the graphical tooling and wish to get more involved with code. In fact, for those of you that remember the distant days of the broker back in around about 2000, 2001, when we were still known by the phrase MQSI or WMQI, in those versions you may remember a very simple graphical panel attached to the compute node, which was really the pivotal part of the start of the mapping node technology as we know it today. And the spirit of that element of the tooling was temporarily lost, and we've now regained that through this support pack, which enables us to link together the code that's generated from a particular mapping. So, like all support packs, this one fulfills a requirement which is not actually provided by the base product. And that statement here that you see in the second bullet down about the similar function not currently in plan for 6.1 or 7 relates to the time scale of where we're at currently with the products. 6.1 is the release that we're at the moment. The V7 there, do not take that to imply particularly a version 7. That's basically meaning version N plus 1, whenever that may appear. So currently we don't have anything in plan, hence the reason to bring out the support pack at this point in time. But depending on its success, we may well actually incorporate the support pack within the products. We shall see about that at a later time. So what are we really providing here? We're providing an easily accessible on-ramp for learning eSQL in the first place. So for those of you starting to get up and running with a product for the first time, the ability to use a graphical tool linked together with code is a nice, useful, easy route in to start using code for some maps that you've already designed. We can also assist using IA9Y with the reuse of code. So it's often easier to actually store eSQL within a repository in order to maintain its function, rather than necessarily using a map which may not successfully move to the next version of the tooling. So for a reuse aspect, code is also quite a nice way of encapsulating function which was originally a map. The next item there refers to a compelling performance improvement. Now, obviously, we can't guarantee any performance improvement when we actually run the eSQL rather than the map, but with some simple test cases, we've found there's roughly a 3 and 10 times improvement with version 6 of the product. That will be diminished somewhat with 6.1 simply because the performance overall of the mapping node has improved dramatically with that version of the release. And I'll go into some more details about those performance figures later on in the slide deck. The final bullet point on this slide just mentions the fact that the original idea behind the support pack stemmed from a proof of concept which we actually ran with a retail customer in the UK. And this showed us that we really need not only the ability to easily define graphical maps for transformations, but then the need to tweak that code afterwards in order to improve their performance as well is quite a common thing that we're asked for by customers. So hence the reason why we actually introduced the support pack. So moving on then to slide number 4, what we see here is quite a simple screenshot which demonstrates what you'll see in the middle of the support pack download site should you go and download this IA9Y. As it says at the top there, more by accident than design, we've actually got the source code for the support pack available on that download site as well. Basically, internally within IBM, before we can actually publish the source code but the support pack itself, we need to follow quite a strict process which ensures that a copy of that source code is actually available on IBM's internal centralized versioning control system. So the fact that we've also got it available there for bug fixing should IBM choose to terminate my contract for any reason, just rest assured that we've got ongoing support there for the product. As you'll see, there is a PDF document, which is basically the user guide that describes all of the message flows, which are the simple samples that we'll be stepping through a little bit later. We also supply 3 different zip files there. The top one of those, which is named IA9Y_1.0.0, is the actual zip file of the plugin node itself. I mentioned plugin node. I should have said Eclipse plugin there. This is not to be confused with the plugin node. This is simply adding a menu option into the toolkit, and we'll see an example of what that looks like in a few slides' time. So in order to actually install the support pack, you just need that zip file I just referred to, and you need to place that within one of the correct directories of the tooling, and again, more details on that in a moment. The second zip file that we have listed in that table there is called sample projects, and that one is actually a project interchange file showing all of the examples that we refer to with the message flows and message maps. The third item that we have there, which is called project interchange, is actually a project interchange file for the source code of the actual Eclipse plugin. So if you did want to play around, as I put there, have fun playing, you can install that interchange file as well within the broker tooling in order to take a look at the Java that I wrote. And as I put there, I write bad Java, so just be warned, if you do want to play around with it, maybe you'll find some criticisms of the source as well. So we'll just move on now, and we'll go on to slide number 5. So the installation directories are actually slightly different depending on whether or not you're using version 6 or version 6.1 of the product. Forgive me, I'm just going to pause a moment. I seem to have temporarily lost my web link, so I'm just going to flip to my copy of the slides. So talking about the installation of that product there, yes, of course, there's 2 different places you might want to put it depending on whether you're operating with version 6 of the product or version 6.1. This slide actually covers the details for version 6, exactly like the published PDF user manual, but I would like to stress the plugin still works perfectly with version 6.1. Basically, after you download that original zip file named IA9Y_1.0.0, you'll actually unzip that, and inside you'll see that it contains a single folder called map_to_esql_1.0.0, and that actually needs to be added to your Eclipse installation's plugins subdirectory, which is actually stated there on the slide on the bullet. If you're working with version 6.1, the equivalent directory you need to place that in is also in the program files folder and inside IBM, except with version 6.1 of the product, the broker toolkit is now placed in a directory by default called WMBT610. If you look inside there, you'll see the plugins directory associated with the Eclipse plugins, and that's the one that you paste that folder in, completely unchanged. There's no other requirement to do anything else there. When it comes to actually importing the samples and so on, you need to do that via the use of a project interchange file. Just to be aware that when you do that in version 6.1, the import wizard has actually changed ever so slightly, so that when you're selecting an import source, the project interchange option is now found underneath a different folder at the bottom called Other. It's basically the last one of a whole series of list of options. Having selected that project interchange file, you can then select the projects that you'd like to actually import. In our case, there are 2 separate projects used for the samples. One of them is a message flows project, and the other one is a message set project, and those are then reused by all of the samples. So those are the samples. Just thinking that it's also worthy of note here. The samples are very quick to run, and I would advise that anyone trying out the support pack for the first time really does use it with those samples first, because you'll get a feel for how the support pack actually runs, and then you'll be able to apply it to some slightly more complex code of your own. Also, note that the samples are aimed to test the majority of all of the functional options that we actually offer available with Maps. So these projects as well form the basis of the actual test material that I used in order to check that the support pack produced code that did exactly the same thing as the original mapping. So if your mapping does something which is beyond the scope of these examples, then it's possible, I would stress, that the support pack won't work. Several nested combinations of the various statement options were tested out, so there shouldn't really be any very simplistic bugs out there. But I guess, as all developers know, it's best not to be too confident until someone else has tested some new combination that then comes back and bites you at any time later. So just to be aware, this is the majority of the test material that I've used for the support pack. But as I say, we've been out in the field now for almost a year, and we've had no bugs reported to me. So that's pretty good stats as far as I'm concerned. We'll now flip on to slide number 6. After we've actually installed the support pack, which is simply copying over that directory structure, the next thing that we need to do is actually restart the toolkit. And when we restart the toolkit, like any Eclipse plugin that we apply, we need to make sure that we restart it using an option called dash clean. And what's shown on the left-hand side of this slide is a screenshot of the shortcut to a broker tooling. If you right-click that on your desktop and go to Properties, you'll then see that in the target setting of that, the target property there of the shortcut, you'll notice that it says dash clean. And this essentially goes through validation of all of the Eclipse plugins which are installed on your box and then recognizes that it needs to load in a new plugin. That dash clean option also needs to be applied to version of the broker 6.1 if you're operating on that level of the product. Just to be aware that with version 6.1, you actually start up the broker tooling using the eclipse.exe executable with then an additional parameter called dash product, which actually points at the IDE for the tooling. That can be used with a dash clean option in exactly the same way as the executable wmbt.exe that you see here on the screen. Just to make you aware that when probably the easiest way of doing that is to right-click an existing shortcut and then add in that dash clean option in the target field, and then actually run that shortcut once you've first selected it. What I've got shown here on the right-hand side of the screen is just the directory where you'll find all of that stuff for version 6, so that can help you navigate around. So I think that's all from that slide there on slide 6, and we'll flip on to slide 7. What I've got shown here is a view of the broker development view within the Eclipse. It's normally shown on the left-hand side of your broker tooling by default. And that's demonstrating what things will look like when you've actually installed the project interchange file, which includes the samples for the support pack. Note that I've actually cheated slightly here for any version 6.1 users out there. When you install into a version 6.1 workspace, you might notice a slight problem with one of the 9 mapping files. It's basically the very first one there. And the reason for that, you actually see a red error pop up in your problems view associated with version 6.1. And the reason for that is that with 6.1, we introduced a new header parser called the MQRFH2 compact parser for the first time. So that actually changes what one of the targets is called in the mapping. It's very easy to fix it. Basically, if you do get that bug, you just open up that message map file, delete out that particular MQRFH2 target that it's referring to in the error message, and then drag and drop the new RFH2 folder to the target that you'll see displayed in the window. If anybody has any problems with that, then please drop me an email and I'll point out how to do it. The alteration makes no difference to the sample at all. This is just trying to demonstrate the use of an RFH2 header within a mapping. But as far as the mappings are concerned, the use of that particular header is no different from any other header. The only reason for it being introduced with that level of the tooling is, as I say, to do with this compact parser, which was introduced for the first time. Also note that when you actually do this import for the first time, there will only be one ESQL file actually in the workspace. This screenshot actually shows two. They're about halfway down. One is called library.esql, and the other one is called generated messageflow1mapping.esql. that second one that I mentioned there won't actually be present when you first import the workspace, and that's an example of the kind of file that's actually produced when you run the Eclipse plugin for the first time. Each sample that I do provide with a support pack, this is 9 samples in total, and each one of those has their own individual message flow, named 1 to 9. no originality there. Each one of those message flows is basically a direct duplicate of one another. They only consist of 3 nodes, an MQ input node, followed by a mapping node, followed then by an MQ output node. And the only reason to include all of those message flows is that each one has a separate mapping, so I wanted to use a unique naming convention for all of those flows. The really interesting bits are actually the mapping files themselves, and you'll see there those 9 separate mapping files which make the basis of all of the samples that we'll be discussing. At the base of the slide, what you can see there is also a message set which has been provided, and that's there for the sake of using definitions within the MRM, or the so-called Message Repository Manager. The broker product allows you to actually model what a message looks like before you pass it into the runtime, and it's this MRM component that actually uses message sets in order to do that. So once we've got these message sets available to us, that then allows us to utilize the mapping node and do drag and drops from the input source format to the output target format. So we provide that message set there, which includes within it the definitions of a large number of messages. I think there's about 14 or 15 messages in there, and they are then used in turn by those individual maps to bring an input into an output format. I'm just thinking what else we should mention here. When you actually generate the SQL, which the support pack provides, note that it's then the responsibility of the message flow developer to actually manually drag and drop a compute node into the message flow palette in place of the existing mapping node. So the main way that we would see this support pack being utilized is you've already designed your message flow, which contains one or more mapping nodes inside of it, and then you would run the Eclipse plugin that we're talking about here to actually generate eSQL code to replace that mapping node altogether. At that stage, you would need to place the compute node into the equivalent position of the flow where the mapping node was originally and link that compute node to the eSQL file which you generated through use of the support pack. And those eSQL files follow the naming convention that you can see inside the screenshot we've still got up on the screen here on slide number 7. The last thing to mention on this slide is that there is also a library eSQL file in the middle there, and that's got 2 functions inside of it, one called average and another one called cardinality. The reason for the inclusion of that library SQL file is to demonstrate inside one of the samples that we can actually call from a mapping node out to eSQL, and likewise if we then generate eSQL from that map file, that will respect the call and respect the original procedure. So we've got an example within one of the samples there that demonstrates the support for that piece of function. So I think that's about it for slide 7. Now we'll flip on to slide number 8. And here we go with the Generate eSQL wizard. This demonstrates what actually happens when you run the plugin. On the left-hand side of the screen, we've got an example file screenshot of when we actually import the project interchange contents in order to get up the display that you saw in the previous slide. Of more interest, and the main thing we're going to talk about on this slide, is actually on the right-hand graphic. And that shows what is pretty much the only evidence that the plugin has actually been successfully installed. You'll see here that I've got a screenshot of when you right-click a .messagemap file, MSGMAP is the extension there. When you right-click that message map file, the menu that pops up, you'll see down the last one item on that menu, it says map to eSQL and then an option generate eSQL, all of which has been highlighted there. Typically, with a native installation of the message broker tooling, you won't see that option on the menu, and that is the way that you'll check that it's actually been installed successfully. When you do that right click, that menu option should pop up and allows you to select generate eSQL. When you select generate eSQL for that message map, it will actually start off the wizard that we then give further information in order to say what we would like the code to do, which is actually generated from the original message map. In this particular case, I'm doing it on a very simple workspace which only shows one message flow and one message map there, just to make the display look a little bit clearer. When it actually generates that message map, the eSQL that's generated is always put back into the same message flow project from where the original map was. So if you want to do any other reorganization after the point where you generated the SQL, you then have to move that around using the standard features of the Eclipse toolkit in any case. So we'll flip on to slide number 9 now. And this shows the first panel of the so-called Maps eSQL Generate eSQL Wizard. And you'll see that it's actually relatively sparse in terms of options here. There are basically two halves to this wizard, the left-hand side and the right-hand side. The left-hand side is referring to properties of the input root. That is to say the logical tree which is actually passed into the mapping node from the left-hand side of the flow going in a standard downstream fashion, left to right, the way you'd normally design a message flow. And the right-hand side of this screen shows the options that you want to apply to the output root. That is the logical tree that you're building as output from that mapping node. And there are only two options on either side. One is to say which message domain of a parser you would like to use on the input and the output. Those message domains we actually offer you there are the MRM domain or the different flavors of the XML domain. So we have the XML, XMLNS, and XMLNSC. Those three domains all do very similar things, but as the more expert members of the audience might be aware, the XML domain has actually been deprecated from version 6.1. We really are trying to encourage everybody to move across to the new XMLNS, or even better, the XMLNSC domains. Those domains are namespace aware, and they're also a lot more compact, and they perform an awful lot better as well. So there is good cause to move yourself across should you get the opportunity. We still support the old XML domain as well, and we also support the MRM domain, which is those modeled domains that we were talking about first up when we mentioned the message sets. The only reason for these drop-down options being offered on the menu is that the actual eSQL which is generated is slightly different depending on what message domain you're operating in. So when we actually write eSQL code, the output code that we generate for the MRM domain does not have any reference to the very root of a tree. In the case of the XMLNSC domain, the root level or the message level of that tree will actually appear as part of the correlation name when we're addressing fields within that tree. So for that reason, the plugin needs to know which one you want to operate in so that it knows the style of syntax to generate when it comes to produce those eSQL statements. The other thing on this panel is, of course, those little tick boxes. And that tells the plugin whether or not you would like to exploit a feature of eSQL known as references. When we navigate the tree of a logical tree, of an input or an output root, what we're actually doing is we're directing the parser to step across those tree structures line by line. It's basically like navigating a tree structure. We start at the very top and then we come down several levels until we find the element that we're interested in transforming. What we can actually do with an ES|QL reference is maintain a pointer to one particular level of the tree so that we don't have to navigate from the root element every time we execute the next statement. And this actually is a good practice, or a best practice as it were, for generating very performant eSQL. So the use of references is generally to be encouraged. The only downside to using references is, of course, that it can generate code which looks slightly more complex to the eye. And we'll see some examples later on of the differences of how it of the code that's generated at the far end of running the plugin. So those are the only options, very straightforward. When you actually click the Finish button on that wizard, it's at that stage where the SQL file is produced and you will see it pop up inside your workspace and it will be then available to you within the message flow project. So we'll flip on to slide number 10 now, please. What's shown here is exactly what I was just referring to with regard to references. This particular code is actually taken from the very first sample that I actually shipped with the support pack. Sample one is relatively straightforward. In fact, it's so straightforward that I've not actually bothered to show a slide with the map script here. Basically, the input and the output message both have five elements in them. On the input side, those elements are labeled local element 1 up to local element 5. And on the output side, they're called local element A through to local element E. Very simply, element 1 maps to A, 2 to B, 3 to C, and so on for all those five elements. And that's the reason why we see inside the code here above the red line, immediately above that red line, those five set statements have been generated from the plugin as a result of running it against a map, which simply maps them across one element to another. So very simple code that's been generated. At the top of the code there, we've also got an example of a while loop. And I'm going to ignore that for the moment because we'll cover that in greater depth on a later slide. Just suffice to say that that loop is basically dealing with the header structure of the message. The other thing that's worth mentioning on this slide is basically the difference between using a reference or using the lack of a reference with that original option within the GUI wizard. In the case of using a reference, you'll see there are some additional lines inserted in the code at the bottom below the red line. So above the red line is an example of not ticking those boxes to use references, and at the bottom is an example of the code generated if we had chosen to use the references. So what we've got in here is the creation of the last child of the output root, which is actually the domain level of the tree, called MRM there. And then having created that last child, we immediately generate a reference to that child, which is then used in all of the later statements where we say set out body ref dot local element A. This avoids us having to navigate between the output root and the MRM part of the trees every single time we execute one of those five statements. In the case where we have only a few statements like this, it's really not going to make a large degree of difference, but as soon as we get into heavily nested trees, that will become a lot more marked in the performance differences between the two pieces of code. So that's about it for the sample that we've got here on this slide 10. We'll flip on to slide 11 now. This is showing a slightly more in-depth example and is what I was referring to with that example of a while loop. This is taken from sample 2. So within the flow project that you import, you can open up the mapping that's named messageflow2_mapping, and this is the map script that will be presented to you. On the output side, we're copying across the MQMD header, which is very straightforward, a simple line there that you can see the value of $source/MQMD. And beneath that, the main message body itself is message 4, and this is located. This includes a single element called local element 2, whose children are nested within three separate for loops. You'll see here that each one of the for loops, immediately directly horizontally opposite the level that says 4 within that tree, actually includes a reference to the input message. So message 3 on output has a local element 1 who's got a child called local element A. And it all depends on how many occurrences there are of that local element A, how many iterations of the first for loop will be executed. For each one of those iterations, we actually set a local element D according to the value of that local element A. So in other words, if A occurred 3 times, then D would occur 3 times. If A occurred 5 times, then D would occur 5 times, and so on. We then repeat that very similar structure 3 times over. So we've got exactly the same idea here shown for local element D, E, and F. And the reason for including 3 elements in this particular sample is just to show that the for loop indexes do not get confused with one another. And we want to be sure that if we use more than one for loop within a single mapping, there are no problems associated with doing that. So if we move on to slide number 12, we'll see here the code that's actually been generated from that map node. So if we right-click that message map that we just saw in the previous slide and said generate eSQL, these are the loops that would have been generated. And as you can see here, we actually begin by declaring A1 as an integer value and then A2 as another integer value, and those are the indexes that the loop actually goes over. You'll see that the second loop uses A3 and A4, and then the third loop uses A5 and A6. So you get the idea about how these references are basically used. This also gives you some idea of the scale of the code that can actually be completed from a mapping node. We can go numerically as high as we want. The reason why the A character is used here is that all references and variables that we use within eSQL must start with an alpha character as opposed to a numeric. So this was a very simple naming convention that I could establish, which would enable me to hopefully support the majority of mappings. Certainly if you're at the scale of hundreds or thousands of variables, then maybe we'll hit some limits of indexes at that stage, but certainly that's not occurred so far, so I'm pretty confident about that convention as how we name those references as they go through. So in addition to actually naming those references, if we then actually take a look at the individual loops that we've got here, the while loops actually go from A1 less than or equal to A2, and they iterate throughout those references, throughout those loops across all of the children at the right level of the tree. So we mentioned that the input message here includes a local element 1, which is kind of a parent for all of the final sub-elements. That parent is not involved in the loop at all. The loop is simply over its children, which is the reason why the A1 field is used as the index within the move statement of that while loop. So the while loop continues on its merry way, and each time we iterate over an extra element, we increase the value of A one by one, and then move the reference accordingly to the next child. This is a relatively simple example, but if we start nesting loops within loops, then pretty rapidly these references can become somewhat harder to actually read. So as a first step, I would advise you to run the support pack without the use of the references, and maybe when you get a little bit more confident with eSQL, then you start to expand on it a little bit. So what's actually not shown in this slide is the naming convention that's used for the overall eSQL which is generated, and we'll see that in a later example. If we move on then to the next slide, number 13, what we'll see here is another sample. I've now jumped to sample 6, so for the sake of brevity, I don't plan on covering all 9 message maps within the time we have allotted today. I see already I'm running slightly behind schedule, so apologies for that. But yes, this is sample number 6. We've skipped out a few here. This one is rather straightforward by comparison to the while loop. This one is showing the use of an if statement, which has got a couple of conditions. One of those conditions is basically identifying whether or not the value on the input message is less than the value 5. Relatively straightforward there. The second condition identifies whether it's greater than 5, and assuming neither one of those have been met, we'll drop into the else statement at the bottom, which will actually tell us that we must have the value 5 exactly. So a relatively simple if-else structure. If we go to slide 14, that will show how that's then converted into code by the plugin. The stuff at the top of this slide here is basically the dealing with the properties folder and the MQMD folder. That's not particularly useful for this particular example. What we are interested in is the if statement at the very base of the slide there. Very simply, it examines the value of the input root MRM local element 1 and then drops into one of those 3 statements accordingly and sets the statement on output to be equal to one of those character strings, just saying which one of those conditions it evaluated to. So quite a simple example, just showing that we also cope with the if statements. What this slide also shows quite nicely is the generated comments at the very top of the message map file and the outer definition of the compute node module. This is an important point where we actually draw attention to the naming convention that the support pack uses. When we generate a module, what we actually call that module is the name of the original map file, which in this case was messageflow6_mapping, and then we append a suffix to that of _compute. And it's that compute node module which would need to be referred to by your compute node, which will replace the original mapping. So when you come to execute the message flow, having done the conversion, you'll need to drop in your own compute node, which refers to that source code. So we'll fly on now to slide number 15. This is a slightly more complex example. I just wanted to include the most complex example from the samples there, just to give you a full flavor of easy, medium, and hard difficulty. This is sample number 9, and as you can see, it includes some for loops again, but this time we've got several different layers or levels within the tree structure that we're dealing with. What's shown beneath the red horizontal line on this slide is the input structure and the output structure. These screenshots are taken directly from the message definition file within the message set, basically showing what the message on input and output look like. And the numbers at the right-hand side of that graphic demonstrate the minimum number of occurrences and the maximum number of occurrences of each of the elements within the message. So on the left-hand side there, we see that the first child of message 13 is a guy called single element 1, and he can occur anything from 1 to 5 times. Followed by that, we actually have a grouped elements level, which has a maximum occurrence of -1, which is the way that the broker symbolically shows an unbounded number of occurrences. So that grouped element then contains several children, and each one of those iterations will contain those children because each of the local element 1 to 5 is a mandatory occurrence. There's 1 min occurs and 1 max occurs. So that's the structure we have on the left-hand side. On the right there, we've got message 14, which is the target structure that we're mapping to. And that target structure includes some fields at the very top level. Field A has between 1 and 5 occurrences. That's no coincidence because he's going to be mapped according to the content of the single element 1 that appeared on the input message. We've then got 3 very straightforward fields. They're called B, C, and D. And then at the bottom there, we've also got a grouped field section, which is, again, an unbounded number of occurrences, which is the direct mapping for the grouped elements on input. So what we then see in the map script at the top of the slide is how we can actually construct a map to bring the contents of 13 into the message 14. At the very top of the message 14, we have a for loop, and that one goes around the number of occurrences of single element 1, and that's then followed by field A as its child, because that's the output from that loop. We then have field B, C, and D as siblings of that for loop. So the nesting that you use within that overall map script structure needs to match with the nesting of the output fields and the target structure of your mapping, as I'm sure any seasoned mapper will be aware. The reason why I'm drawing all of your attention to these different levels in the tree is that then that has to be respected in the code that we generate as a result of changing that map file into eSQL. And we'll see that on the next slide, if we could flip on to slide number 16. Briefly, before I bring that code up, what this graphic shows here is what the wizard selections were that we set it to in order to generate the actual eSQL. So in this particular case, I've just chosen to use a reference on input but not on output, and then I've used different message domains on the input and the output side just to, again, try and make the example a little bit more complex, show the degree of variability that we have with what the support pack can produce. So those are the options that we've got there. If we then move on to slide number 17, we'll see the code that's actually generated. And here we've got the for loops that actually map directly to those levels of nesting that I was referring to on the input. So we have an overall loop which uses A1 and A2 as the indexes, and then that goes and produces field A on output. At this point, maybe I should draw your attention to another best practice that we have here. You'll notice that the declaration of A2, which is the maximum number that we're going to run the index of the loop to, this has actually been set by using the cardinality function on the original input structure. And that cardinality function basically counts up how many occurrences of single element 1 there were on the input, and then loops over them as the index of the loop that follows. When we declare that value of A2 in the integer cardinality statement, notice that that's actually outside of the main while loop itself. It wouldn't make any sense to have that instruction within the while loop, because we would be simply re-evaluating the same value many times over, and that would be a performance inhibitor. So just to note there, another piece of good practice for eSQL coders, put that cardinality statement outside of the loop itself, as you would classically see within mapping of the copy message headers, for example, which is automatically generated for you by a compute node. Similar kind of idea that we have with the code we've generated here. So with that, we'll move on to slide number 18. Here we talk a little bit about the performance aspects of the support pack. I guess the most important thing to say on this slide is to beware of statistics. I'm sure there's some classic phrase I should be quoting at this point about lies and damn lies. As we say at the very top here, it is possible to gain a performance improvement by converting a mapping file into eSQL for execution by a compute node. Now, that's a very generic statement there. We would not guarantee that it would happen with any particular file, but we found in the majority of test cases, certainly with version 6 of the product, then this support pack can actually yield a performance increase. And we say, why a performance increase? Well, the basic difference between the approach taken by this plugin and the original mapping node itself is basically within the eSQL that it generates. You may or may not be aware that when you actually generate a map node and then compile that map node in a flow in order to deploy it using a broker archive file, when we generate that compiled message flow, what's actually happening under the covers is you're generating a compute node which executes some eSQL, which is generated as a result of the original graphical mapping that you produced. So the user generating a mapping is actually causing a compute node and its associated eSQL to be deployed to the runtime. So the same runtime engine is actually executing here as if we'd just put in a compute node and written the eSQL ourselves. The difference between the performance of the eSQL we produce with the support pack and the basic mapping node itself is simply in the number of sub-procedures and routines that we use and the style of the eSQL that we produce. The style of eSQL produced, as you've seen in the previous slides within this presentation, is very much just a simple inline kind of approach. As we approach a statement within the map script, we then have a statement within eSQL that it maps to, and then we execute it one after another. There is no attempt here to be object-oriented in our approach. or in fact to use any kind of reusability in terms of the sub-procedures that we might need within that mapping. This is one of the reasons why sometimes you get slower performance with the direct mapping node. So as we say here in the second bullet point, we actually carried out a POC with a large UK retailer, and this demonstrated that there are customers out there that need to combine graphical mappings in order to get up and running with development processes very quickly, with very high performance when we actually come to execute those mappings in the runtime. And this is one example why you might want to try out using the code to see if it gives you any kind of performance advantage. And the actual test results that are quoted on this slide here were carried out independently by the broker development performance team. So within the Herzly development team for the broker product, we have a performance team whose job it is to produce performance reports, which are then published on the support pack. And they use some standard framework to basically test what the performance throughput is of a single message flow. In this particular case, it's really not important what the hardware was that we were using to actually run these tests. And in fact, the headline numbers, again, I would stress, are not important at all on this slide. All that I'm really seeking to draw your attention to is some of the relative performance improvements, which we have seen with some quite straightforward examples. In the case of the three conclusions at the bottom of the slide, they actually map to these individual bar files which we used to carry out the test. So in each one of the tests, there are six in total, we had a single broker archive file which was used to deploy a single message flow. So in the case of bar one, where we quote that number of 44 messages per second, this was a very simple message flow which only carried out one transformation, and it had the MRM input domain and the MRM output domain. And we, in the first conclusion, we're looking there at the difference between the exact equivalent mapping when we actually run that with the SQL that was generated from the support pack. So the 44 messages a second improved to 150 messages a second, which is around about, as we say there, a 3.4 times improvement just for that particularly straightforward, simple mapping. Basically, the input and the output messages contained around about 20 fields, and they were simply taken from input to output. In some cases, we carried out very simple string functions on those fields. It was basically just trying to produce a run-of-the-mill test case. There's nothing special about it at all. When we then look at some of the later results, we've got bar 3 and bar 4. Those transformations, again using the MRM domain on input and output, but this time we actually contained two separate nodes within the message flow. So rather than just doing one transformation, we actually carried out two there. The basic difference between those two is proportionately the length of time which is actually spent doing transformation within the message flow rather than the original parsing. There's basically a greater multiplicative factor between the two due to the fact that a greater proportion of time is spent there transforming. That same conclusion also applies to the third transformation. The XML and SC domain is actually faster than the MRM, so with transformations, less time is spent in the writing and parsing of those messages, so proportionately more time is then spent in the transformation aspects of the flow. Hence, we got a greater proportional improvement in throughput with that third comparison as well. So before leaving this slide, I would just like to reiterate here that there is a danger with all statistics. We certainly make no guarantees that things will be improved. It just really depends on what fraction of the overall processing time of your message flow is spent within your particular map transformation, and that will then depend on the substance of that transformation and many other factors. But basically, we just like to put up here some examples of the stats that we have. So with that, we'll move on to the next slide. We're almost at the back of the deck now. So on this slide number 19, we're talking about the statement of support. And as I said at the beginning, at the top of the deck, what we're trying to do here is just to give you some flavor of the kind of syntax that we'll accept and we will know how to cope with within the plugin. At the very top of the slide here, we have the input and output message domains, and as we said, we support MRM, XML, and SC, which is the compact version of the XML and S-parser, the XML and S-parser, and the XML parser. As we said, that one's deprecated, so we're not encouraging to use that. It might seem like a bit of a silly thing here to have things which are in or out of support, and this is not just concerned with the setting of the domain and the set type and the format fields within the properties folder or the RFH2 folder. having these items in or out of support is really all due to the differences in the syntax of the eSQL correlation name statements, which are actually made as a result of running the support back. So that's the reason why we have them listed there. I guess the biggest omission here in that list is actually the SOAP domain. Originally, the support pack was released for version 6 before the SOAP domain was incorporated into the product. But given that the fact that the SOAP domain is based upon the XML and SC domain, it wouldn't be too difficult to actually use the plugin in its current state to generate XML and SC maps and then to do a global find and replace on the phrase XML and SC for the phrase SOAP. Of course, that won't help you where it comes to the actual SOAP header properties. So there is a little bit of a gap in support here for that new message domain, which hasn't come through to the plugin as yet. That is one thing that we would consider adding for any later versions of the product which are brought to market. So obviously, we do need to support the SOAP domain if we end up incorporating this into the product. At the moment, as a support pack, it's simply there produced for version 6, so that's the reason why syntactically I didn't include the use of the SOAP domain inside of it. Another big omission, I guess, while we're on the topic of omissions, is listed right at the very bottom of the slide, and that's to do with a lack of support for database targets. This is kind of ironic when we consider that the ESQL language that the broker uses is based on the SQL 99, sort of the ANSI standard, which was originally introduced for the product. eSQL actually stems from database manipulation, and this was the core area, or the core need, if you like, from a business requirement point of view, which spawned the original creation of the message broker. So given all of that heritage, it is a bit surprising that I've not got database targets in there at the moment. The only reason for that is that the mapping node supports select, insert, updates, and deletes, and so on, quite a few different syntactic flavors, and I didn't want to rewrite the parsing of those statements within the mapping node itself. So it might involve the usage of a third-party library in order to do that, and there, of course, the restrictions on publication as a support pack become so much more greater from an administrative point of view. So that's the justification that I would certainly propose for why that wasn't added in the first version. So what this means is that if you're using a mapping node to interact with a database, then the plugin node will not provide any mapping of those statements at the moment. That is, as I say, the only other real omission. The good news, as is listed on this slide, is that we support all of the folders in relation to many different parsers. So the properties folder, the NQMD, the KIX information header we've got there, the dead letter header, all kinds of different headers that you might come across when coding standard message broker flows. This is really the advantage, I guess, with mapping technology, in that any mapping tool allows us to simply map from one logical definition to another. We don't really have to get concerned with the movement of that logical tree into a protocol on the wire. All we're really doing is converting trees here, so it would be very simple to apply the same logic of the plugin node, the plugin support pack here, to a situation of any message domain that we've not yet come across. So extensibility-wise, the code is reasonably open for us to add these levels of support later. In the middle of the slide there, we say that we support for loops and if conditions and else statements. Those are the examples that we saw within the samples. What I didn't show within the sample screenshots, but which you will see supported with the samples that ship with the project interchange file, are all of the bits at the bottom there, which is mentioning the XPath functions for strings, booleans, numerics, datetime functions. All of those things are supported with the support pack. So if you've utilized any of those within your maps, then you'll have absolutely no problem porting them across to eSQL. If we move on to slide 20, first off, I guess some apologies for the rampant jingoism that I've got personified by my mini Olympian here. Activities in Beijing recently have stirred a bit of national pride over here in the UK, where the relatively rubbish fourth place in the medals table has actually caused for a huge celebration for us. So that's simply my little icon that I've got up there, and it's just a reminder that we're ready for some questions. So at this point, I'll hand things back across to Elijah to cope with any of the polls that he wants to execute or questions on the content that I've presented so far today.
Thank you, Ben, for a great presentation.
We'll take our first question from Bill McCormick with Pep Boys.
Ben, My question is, I understand your reluctance about making performance claims, but is it a fairly safe generality to take back to my developers that if they're doing a mapping flow for a heavily used message flow, meaning it's going to see a lot of input and output, that they should consider transforming these into message flows just to get some kind of performance bump?
So, yes, I think a broad generalization, I would answer yes to that question. Some things that you might want to bear in mind when recommending or otherwise. Number one is you'll see greatest improvement, obviously, in the elements of your code which you run most frequently. So the message broker does offer some quite good accounting and statistics modules which enable you to highlight the kind of hot spots within your message flow just to get some kind of idea for a production system how much traffic is running through a particular flow and therefore hitting a particular map. So assuming that you're hitting a map a fair number of times, obviously the more times you hit it and the better performant the code is, the better the overall throughput of the message flow will be. The performance numbers that I presented on the call here were simply for version 6 of the product, and we have actually put in within the development organization quite a lot of time and effort into improving the performance of the mapping node. So with 6.1, I've not actually run any tests, but I would expect the proportional factors to be somewhat diminished from the version 6 results. So that said, the other thing to mention here, I guess, is that to use this support pack is actually a relatively quick and easy experience to get up and running. So I would encourage you that it's certainly no more than an hour or two's effort to simply install the plugin. Well, the installation of the plugin should take no more than a few minutes, but then running that plugin against some existing example maps and then running a very quick performance test would not be a great labor of time for the possible benefits that it could reap your development guys. So I would encourage you to do that. And if you're wanting to... sometimes people say that the hardest thing here is actually to get the numbers out of their system. It might also be worth name-dropping here another nice utility, which is enabling you to get performance throughput numbers. There is produced an AlphaWorks project, and there's also a DeveloperWorks article about it. If you search in DeveloperWorks under the name of Kevin Braithwaite or Mark Carter, that's Mark with a C, you should find an article that those guys wrote. They basically are old members of the performance team here in Hursley, and they produced a Java utility that puts messages onto one queue and gets them off another and calculates the throughput time of messages for a flow running between those two queues. So that's quite a nice little harness there that we can actually quickly implement in order to get a feel for how any given message flow is performing. So the utilization of that tool in addition to the plugin might give you a very fast idea of whether or not it would be worth investing further effort for your organization in using the support pack beyond that point. But I would certainly say, give it a go and see what happens. It certainly won't do any harm.
Okay, thank you.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the Western Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Ben, for presenting today.